All right, Mr. Chairman, ready when you are.
All right, thank you. I will go ahead and call the meeting to order, and we will start with a roll call, please.
Jagadishan Krishnamurthy.
Present.
Brian Kirkland. Eddie Cook.
Here.
Jeffrey Fleetham.
Here.
David Byers.
Here.
Ryan Murray.
Present.
Lev Gonick. J.R. Sloan.
Here.
And Mr. Chairman, we don't have any legislators that have been appointed into the new term, so I'm going to skip those and move on to Rebecca Pereira for Richard Stavnik.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum of 5 members.
Thank you very much, Chuck. Well, welcome, everybody, to 2023's edition, first edition of our ITAC meeting. I will go ahead and remind folks that this is a public meeting, and we do comply with public meeting law. We have included in our agenda a link for anyone who wishes to provide any comments. You can submit the form there, and our team will review and disposition that. With that, we'll go ahead and step into our first item of business, which is the approval of our December 14th recording as our minutes. If there's any discussion, or I will take a motion.
So moved.
Thank you, Director Fleetham. Do we have a second?
This is Jiggy. I second.
Thank you, Jiggy. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Thank you very much. That's a unanimous vote. With that, we'll go ahead and move forward to our first item, our next item in the agenda, I should say, which will be the Department of Health Services bringing forward their Data Lakehouse project.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Haley Greenberg. I am an engagement manager with the Arizona Department of Administration. I am joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Health Services who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Health Services is seeking approval for the development, installation, and configuration of a sustainable data lakehouse environment. Currently, Department of Health Services has many data sources without a centrally governed data analytics and data set repository, with the excessive amount of point-to-point data feeds that only solve individual business needs. The agency is at risk of sustainability for both the information technology services and business intelligence office units, as well as security concerns. This not only limits the agency's agility to respond to health emergencies, but it slows down information sharing with partners and lowers initial confidence in fact-based data analytics. Morality data is often at the core of ADHS's analytics and is often difficult to curate. The Data Lakehouse offers the opportunity to create a centralized repository of curated morality data, making it a single source of truth. At this time, I will turn this over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
I'll jump in, and perhaps for clarity, I believe this is mortality data, not morality data.
I did say morality data. That is my apologies. I even saw that in my notes, and I immediately regretted it.
That's,
my apologies.
Morality is going to be out of scope for what we'll be dealing with here.
Correct. Mortality data. My sincere apologies. Can we go to the next slide?
Yeah, let's go with the next slide. We'll go ahead and do some introductions with our team. Susan, would you like to start?
Absolutely. Good afternoon, everyone. Susan Robinson. I'm the Chief Business Intelligence Officer here at the Department of Health, and I'll pass it to Paula.
Hi, I'm Paula Mattingly, Assistant Director and Chief Information Officer at ADHS.
And I'm Luke Evans, the IT Project Management Officer. Also in attendance today is our Chief Data Officer, Ravi Pitti. Next, Susan will further introduce the project. Next slide, please, Haley.
All right. So really what we're looking to do today, and JR asked if I could kind of cover Lake House. There's a lot of jargon in this space, so I'll do my best. Ask me questions, I'll probably phone a friend. But essentially what we want to do here is build into a cloud-based environment, a place where we can both receive our sort of raw and in its, we'll call it natural state, which is technically usually called a lake, a data lake, as well as a warehouse, which is where we're going to be having more of our processed and housed data. So when you combine the two together, we got real fancy and you call it a lake house. I didn't come up with it, so we can talk about the semantics of whether that's actually valid later, probably. But really the goal of what we're trying to solve here, as was sort of talked about earlier, is we have a lot of data here at the department, a lot of data coming in around health and public health issues. And we need to have a more streamlined and efficient way to receive all of that data, process that data, and push it out the other side for analytics and to be able to use with our partners across the both our agencies, you know, STIR agencies as well as the state. There's a lot of great information here. You know, everyone's tired of COVID, but I'll tell you, COVID really highlighted the need for us for this solution. We need to be able to be faster and stronger and more accurate with our data. And this structure really allows us to do that in a modern way. Really what we want to be able to do is provide our downstream folks with high quality data that's been vetted and that we really have high confidence in its ability, but also this really allows us to go further, to stop, you know, just doing processing day to day, but really take the next step with our analytic work. And a lot of the great work that started to happen during COVID, we can really continue forth with this and really take ourselves to the next level and really work with our other sister agencies to do the same. So next slide.
Thanks, Susan. So the proposed solution consists of two main procurement elements. The first is the procurement of a best-of-breed data lakehouse toolset, and then second is the procurement of an experienced professional services team in this space. Next, the team will implement a number of governance best practices to support the long-term needs of the data lakehouse. That can include data access security, code management, data classification, data architecture, and data ownership. After the software services are configured, routines will be developed to internally consume a single source of curated data, in this case, mortality data. Agile development best practices will be heavily leveraged to foster collaboration, adaptive planning, and continuous improvement during these development cycles. Next, let's talk about the project responsibilities. Haley, next slide, please. So going from right to left, the professional services vendor at a high level will be responsible for tool configuration and development. Governance creation, architecture design, and training will be a shared responsibility. And then the agency at the left will be responsible for project management, cloud infrastructure support, data access, and user acceptance. Speaking of project management, we would next like to present the proposed project schedule. Next slide, please, Haley. Our goal is to kick off the project in February, stand up the tools in March, and complete development, testing, and rollout before the end of the fiscal year. Project closeout will consist of releasing the project team, receiving and paying invoices, and completing other administrative tasks. Next slide, please, Haley. Total project costs are estimated at $951,000, with recurring support costs of about $100,000 annually to support the in-scope data set mortality for a grand total for 5 years of project and support cost between $1.3 and $1.4 million. Susan will now present what success looks like from the business unit perspective as it relates to the scope of this project. Next slide, please.
So when we think about success for us, it's really going to be around the idea that we've built up the system, but that truly it's being used by our business users and our end users in our agency. So what we want to see is one of the main measures of success is that we take all of our current analytics and reports that exist right now, quite a few of them across different groups in our agency. We want to make sure that those have been migrated to be using the Lakehouse infrastructure. So that's going to be sort of potentially changing data sources and where we're pulling data. 100% of that should be switched over, though, for a success measure. And then we want to see about 90% of our current end users being able to access this Lakehouse. Again, it is a transition. It's a new tool. There's definitely going to be training involved in helping folks understand what the difference is from their current setup of access to this new setup. And so we want to make sure that that training really happens. That's going to continue to push us from a change management perspective in the utility of this Lakehouse. So setting it up is great. If we don't use it, of course, that is not as helpful. So that's going to be sort of our two measures of success. So we can go to the next slide. So we wanted to just quickly talk about some of the due diligence we did here. I will say that I have not been in the game quite as long as some of my colleagues. This is not in technical a new topic or a new idea, but we spent quite a lot of time really methodically understanding what we were trying to produce. We spent a lot of time with both our internal programs and staff, both at a programmatic level and an IT level, to understand the direction that we wanted to build. We wanted this to be the base of a modernization process for us, not a one-off sort of solution, but really a full base of where we're going future state here at the Department of Health. And so we did quite a lot in this due diligence kind of space. We did get some draft proposals. Four vendors provided those responses. We created a whole team. I want to say it was probably about 10 to 15 folks across business and IT to review those proposals, provide feedback in sort of a metric kind of way. And then that's really where we were able to get our final vendor selection. And of course, both it is the vendor selection and the technology. And again, both really went through a lot of rigorous work. There's a lot of tools in this space. There's a lot of changing components in this space. And we really do feel like we took the right amount of time and asked the right amount of questions to really understand what is, you know, currently top of the market and to try to see what is coming down the pipe. We, of course, can never fully know what technology changes are coming, but we feel really confident in the tooling decisions that we made. So next slide for us, Haley. So we're at question time. Haley, I pass it back to you.
Thank you, Susan. Does the committee have any questions? Eddie, I saw your hand up first.
Yay, how about that? Happy New Year, everybody. I have a question. Data lakes tend to be based upon unstructured data. And then I guess my questions around the data lake, not knowing too much in the weeds, usually unstructured data, there's a lot of what I call maintenance of that data, making sure you have the correct data sources. But most importantly, I think about the quality of the data that goes into the data lake. I think about who's going to verify and validate that data. I mean, it becomes, I hate to say it, a big mess. So can you talk a bit more about, you know, doing a data lake with unstructured data versus maybe a data warehouse where it's like maybe structured data? So love to understand the philosophy and the thinking behind the choice.
Happy to hop in for part of this, and then I'm absolutely phoning a friend for a more technical component. But a lot of this work as far as data quality and sort of data wrangling absolutely is sort of day in and day out work for a lot of our folks here. what I think we're trying to do is find the technology solutions that make it easier for us. We, in my opinion, the department, we do spend a lot of time really wrangling and really understanding data quality. Who's reporting? How are they reporting? What are the system structures set up? But what we need to do is be able to automate a lot of that and get us moving in a direction where that's not the main component that we're spending our time on. Gonna pass the question about lake versus warehouse and the thought of that architecture to either Luke or Paula.
Yeah, I might be able to help add to that response. Again, like what Susan mentioned early on, Data Lakehouse is a combination of a data lake and a data warehouse. Most of our large production systems, including vital records, which this is a part of, and also disease surveillance, already have what I would classify as a data lake. It is structured in the sense that it is in a database, but it's not fully curated. So we already have those structures in place today. So what we're doing is really adding the warehouse to our entire solution. And so with that, you have the data lake and the data warehouse combined. Susan's done a great job with putting her team together. It's a newer team to the agency, and a lot of data analysts that are specifically focused on certain data sets, including vital records, are in place to fulfill some of those duties that would normally be very difficult for, I think, your run-of-the-mill IT support person to become experts in that. So we have that side of the fence cover, which I think will offer the solution of making sure we understand our data and we're going through those processes and steps to keep it curated.
And I think another thing we're trying to accomplish is some standardization in this space, because today we have different programs using different tool sets. And so it's hard to share and leverage some best practices and things. So that's another thing we're trying to accomplish with standardizing on these tools and then bringing all the data sets into this one environment.
Well, thank you for your response.
Okay, we'll go to Rebecca first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is that I noticed the, can you hear me?
Yep, we got you.
We got a new computer, so thank you. I noticed that the amount was slightly below the $1 million mark, and I didn't know if that was from a transparency reason, or when I was hearing the presentation, and we talked about mortality data, I was wondering, is the intent that this would ultimately include other data sets, like hospital patient capacity, or, okay, he's seeing a yes. So, okay, that answered my question.
Yep, we know that we're going to expand this more, and so knowing that we're starting here, we need a place to start. But yes, the ultimate goal is that this is going to house, I'll say all and whatever that interpretation can be for us, but all of our data really should be coming into this space. So there will be expansion of this current with more data.
But the other thing I'll point out, Rebecca, is that as we have projects that get into that, over $900,000 range, when we add our 10% contingency that we ask for onto it, that will push the development costs over $1 million, and we seek to avoid the circumstance that had occurred in the past where a project started under $1 million, but then went to $1 million, and then we're asking this committee to approve something for a 10% variance with really no opportunity to question why was it a good idea in the first place.
Sounds all of both answers sound really good to me. Thanks.
And okay. I think the other reason is we're going to use a professional services vendor to help us with this first data set. And we want them to teach us how to fish, but we don't know that we'll be totally up to speed by the second data set. So we're just kind of uncertain whether this will continue in project form or get kind of pushed under more of a maintenance mode once we learn how to do it internally.
All right. Thanks, Paula. Ryan, over to you.
Yeah, good afternoon. Great presentation. Thank you, everyone. My question is around, is the intent for this to be simply for gathering and collecting statistical data to do business analysis against, or will this be either a front end or back end to other operational vital record systems?
That's a good question. I think we will potentially see a combination, which is sort of a non-answer for you in many ways, but it's going to be a combination. We've got some systems which are vendor hosted, and obviously that in itself lends to us using it more from an analytic perspective to just pull it in and do that work on. We do have a couple systems that we have that are in-house built for, you know, that we have a need to have in-house. And in that case, we can actually think about how to really structure operational data use versus analytic use. We do want to make sure we keep them separate. We know that trying to have your one system do all is really where you start getting some performance issues. So that's going to be part of it, but it may look a little bit like a combination, but it's going to be a case-by-case basis, really what's the best utility for the system and the program itself. Paul, I don't know if you have other thoughts.
Yeah, I was just going to say that some of the functions that we expect to build in here would be like deduplicating. And today we do that deduplicating process in several applications. So as part of our modernization, we'll probably take data from the lake house into the operational system versus doing this in multiple places. So we kind of have an architecture laid out that we're striving towards. So I think it'll be a mix of both, like Susan said.
And Ryan, if I may, I want to add one more example, just so you're understanding the scope of what we're trying to do on this first project here, is that the data repository tool also has a built-in API engine, and so we plan to test that and to see if we can replace some of the things that we do out of our operational systems to share data outside of the agency or within the agency through an API for curated data. So this is data that we've vetted that we can actually have access to and then also share with others using that methodology.
That's perfect. That ties directly into my next question, which is, have you identified or is it part of the project to identify those data sources as well as potential data landing points? And tying back to just looking at the question in the PIDGE itself, does this project require multiple system interfaces, for example, APIs, data exchanges with other external applications, et cetera? The answer was no. So with that answer, is that part of the project to identify those things and potentially a future project to do those integrations, or is that something expected as part of this project?
Yeah, I can start, Luke, and pass it over. I think to start, really, we're trying to solve a big chunk of our analytic pain points that we have at the current moment. I think that there's going to be a lot of opportunity for what you just talked about with really trying to redefine and, you know, create efficiencies in those spaces where we can. But I think the main goal that I would say out of the gate here is can I make it better, faster, stronger for the analytic purposes of public health data to really start making some differences in that out the door. I do really see that as more of a secondary, you know, gain for this tool as an option. But my primary purpose really is that solving for the analytic space ultimately right now.
And Ryan, per the question on the pitch, that is correct. We have identified the source data. We own it. Our operational systems will 100% feed this data warehouse at this point. So we won't have to, for the scope of this project, explore other sources of data. So hopefully that answers your question.
Indeed it does. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, you're muted. I believe you were speaking.
I was being efficient by muting myself. Are there any other questions from the committee? All right, I'll turn it back to you, Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, ASSET is recommending that the PIDG be approved with the following conditions as presented. Oh, thank you.
Are there any questions on the conditions? Okay, if there are no further questions, then I will take a motion with regard to the project.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Do we have a second?
This is Ryan, I'll second.
Thank you, Ryan. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Thank you very much. That's the unanimous vote. Susan, Paula, Luke, good luck with your project.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
All right, our next item up for vote, it will be a review from the Department of Economic Security on an IT refresh.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Department of Economic Security, who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of the project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Economic Security is requesting approval to acquire the necessary equipment to support their work staff by replacing outdated, underpowered, and out-of-warranty laptops, desktop computers, and other hardware components. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Clayton Sykes, and I'm the Deputy CIO for the DES. I do have presenting with me today our CIO, Mark Darmer, and our Senior Manager for End User Shared Services, Philip Jablonski. Next slide, please. The DES workforce relies exclusively on their PCs to get their work done from anywhere and at any time. The pandemic has proven that a more versatile workforce is no longer just an incentive to retain employees, but rather a critical business function overall. Our users have to have reliable, high-speed equipment to keep up with the demand for our organization's overall service delivery mission. Additionally, our EUSS teams need to be able to efficiently maintain overall system fitness and security in order to minimize disruptions for our users, as well as to ensure responsible retirement of all those state-owned assets. Next slide, please. As we looked at updating our PC inventory, we identified several business requirements that were must-haves. This included features such as monitor size, overall feature sets, and supportability requirements as well. After reviewing several quotes submitted from multiple vendors, we ultimately landed on Milestone as they met all of the requirements that we had set out. Next slide, please. Our overall implementation strategy is to work with each of our business units across the organization to identify what devices will be selected for replacement, as well as to determine the appropriate disposition of the existing hardware that's already out there. Whether that's going to be reassignment elsewhere in the organization or ultimate surplus of the asset. Next slide, please. As far as project responsibilities go, our end user shared services team, specifically our desktop engineering and PC tech teams, will be working directly with business analysts within each division to identify systems that are targeted for refresh. We won't be leveraging any professional services as a part of this effort. Next slide, please. Upon receiving the approval to move forward, our plan is to engage the appropriate divisional business analysts to identify the priority replacement needs. This deployment methodology is relatively straightforward, and we do anticipate the project completing by the end of the fiscal year. Next slide, please. As far as project costs go, we're looking at just about $3.4 million in total hardware costs, and this includes laptops, monitors, and docking stations. Next slide, please. As with any technology refresh, periodic replacement of IT assets is done to ensure reliability, improve speed and capacity, and to maximize overall system performance. Overall success of this effort will be measured by successfully ensuring that our users can continue to provide timely services to Arizonans in need. Next slide, please. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in summary, we're seeking approval to proceed forward with our requested IT refresh solution. This refresh effort will ensure that essential services that the agency is chartered to provide will continue as required. And at this time, I'll address any questions you may have.
All right, thanks, Clayton. We'll go ahead and go to you, Eddie.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I have a question related to why did WWT and CDW not provide quotes? Was there something that's so unique with the monitors or desktops or laptops that they couldn't provide the quotes? Because really, you only got one set of quotes out of the total four vendors. So I'm kind of curious, why would they not quote on a $3.4 million deal?
Mr. Cook, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would defer that question to our senior manager for end user shared services. Philip, do you know why other quotes didn't come back? Did they give us any information on that?
Mr. Cook, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, no, we did not receive responses back from the other two vendors. What came back from the ADOA enhanced device program did not match the request that we had. They only had one device type, and we were looking for, you know, there's four different devices that we use. So it was only a partial match to what we were looking for. But I can't answer why the vendors did not respond.
I'm just shocked because that this is something that you would think they would crank this out pretty quickly. So I don't know. I'm just a little shocked that they didn't provide any quotes. Was it because the timeline was too short during the holidays? I mean, I just find it where you only get really one quote to compare it. And that's obviously there's a window that they have to meet, you know, to submit the quote. It's just really hard to just take one quote as your go-to without any competition here. So,
Mr. Cook, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would have to put that question then to our procurement folks. Perhaps the vendors had communicated back to them. I just know that the quotes we received were the ones that we worked off of.
Sorry, did you have a follow-up, Eddie, or was that a missed
call? That was just, you know, me being not efficient with my buttons here, since I'm so rusty with not meeting with you guys for a while. So,
all right, are there any other questions from the committee on this? Or any further discussion? With that, I'll turn it back to you, Bob.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, ASSET is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the conditions as presented.
Go ahead, Eddie.
I do have a question. How critical is the project if you went out and did another ask with WFT or CDW or actually with, you know, the hardware vendors? I don't know if it's Dell computers or HP computers that you guys are using on a daily basis, but is there an opportunity to go back out 30 days and try to get some new quotes and see if they give you a better price?
Mr. Cook, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we can do that. You know, if it's in the best interest of state taxpayer dollars, we're most certainly able to go out and redo those quotes. One thing that we've been run up against internally, though, is that we did run through our stockpile of assets that we had. Those are more or less gone. So as the divisions continue to hound us for computers, the technology side of things, we're trying to meet that demand. But I will leave that up to the judgment of the committee as to whether or not we should try to go solicit additional quotes or move forward with what we have.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, if it was an argument where supply chain was, horrible with, any of the possible, suppliers or vendors, I mean, I could find that acceptable where, Milestone had an inventory, that would be fine, but that was the question. If there's no, critical timeline where, maybe a 30-day window to go back out to get more quotes is something that's okay. I mean, I would lean toward that, but obviously, this is just for some discussion here.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Cook, the vendor that was selected, Milestone, which was the one that provided a quote, they are the direct reseller for HP, which is what DES uses for its platform. Our shop is about 99.99% HP at this point. So Milestone is the direct reseller for HP that is available off of the NASIO contracts. So that is essentially kind of going directly to HP for that quote. I have reached out to our procurement team to have them query CDW and WWT to see if there was a reason that they did not submit a quote. And if we get that response back before the end of the meeting, we will certainly provide that. Otherwise, we will follow up with JR and his team at Asset when we receive that information back.
All right, thanks, Mark. Okay, committee, any further discussion or are we ready to move to a vote? Mr. Byers.
I want to get clear. Was this a procurement process? Was it an RFP process they responded to, or did you just get quotes? What was the process they were using?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Byers, as part of the procurement process, there are a number of state vendors, state contracted vendors, okay, that we issue out requests for quotes. So CDW, WWT, Milestone, I believe there's one other vendor that is on state contract for the IT hardware resale. And so we do issue the request out to all of those that are on state contract and allow them an opportunity to respond to that request for quotes.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify, because if it was a formal RFP process, you'd get a protest from the winning vendor if you went back out. So do the other vendors supply HP equipment?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Byers, yes, they do. I did hear back from my procurement person, and the information that they have, because Milestone is a direct reseller for HP, they get preferred pricing, which is then passed on to the state. And so in the past, when CDW and WWT had submitted responses to our request in prior years, their pricing came in substantially higher because they did not get those same discounts from HP that are offered to Milestone as being a direct reseller. And that likely played a significant role in why they may not have responded to this particular request.
Okay. All right, Mark, thanks for that quick follow-up. Okay, committee, again, I will put forth the question. Is there any further discussion, or are we ready to move to a vote?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move approval of the project with the conditions submitted.
All right, thank you, Mr. Byers. Do we have a second?
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Fleetham. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, thank you, committee members. Go forth and procure, Mark.
Mr. Chair members, thank you. Appreciate it. And thank you to Clay and the team here at DES for pulling all of this together and the hard work yet to come to get all that equipment deployed.
Yeah, thank you very much. All right, we're going to move on to the next item in our agenda, which is the Educator Licensure Certification Replacement System with the Department of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Michael Carpenter. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Department of Education, who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. The Department of Education is seeking approval to replace our educational licensure and certification system. The legacy system used is, by the agency is currently outdated, limited, and has become insufficient in serving the needs of the agency. The proposed cloud-based solution will provide services online, improve speed and quality, and provide the agency with greater control over the solution for future customization as necessary. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the project and answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Michael, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am Beth Neely. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Department of Education. I'm going to quickly just go down and let you know who is with us here today. We have Sid Bailey, the new Associate Superintendent for Certification. He is the executive sponsor for the program. Bruce DePlante is with us. He's the Deputy Associate Superintendent over the Educator Preparation and Certification. Joe Carrillo, our Chief Technology Officer. We have Kieran Nero, the Director of IT Program Management. We have Philip Ellis here with us today, the Project Manager. And I do believe that we also have Debbie Jackson. She is the new Deputy Chief Operating Officer here for ADE. So I am going to turn it over to Bruce and Kieran to walk you through the project, and I will be back here for questions at the end. Next slide, please.
Thank you, Beth. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the certification unit implements State Board of Education rules and Arizona statutes related to the qualifications of professional educators and educator preparation programs. The certification unit works closely with educators as well as districts to assist them in adhering to and meeting certification requirements. The certification unit also works closely with institutions of higher education to assist them in adhering to requirements of educator preparation program approval and improvement. Our aging system maintains over 230,000 certifications and historical data going back more than 25 years. Currently, educators applying for certification or certification maintenance endure a few days to 6 weeks waiting period for processing. Our proposed solution will provide better and more efficient customer service in a variety of ways. So as Beth said, our current system was written or developed in-house in 2000. And it's a local-only app installed on each machine as our specialists require. We've over the years tried to build external portals so people can apply online, but that's led to now a hodgepodge of systems that data's got to move back and forth and be sunk ETLs, and we have one other system for the investigative unit that transmits to an API. So just really kind of all over the place. We run into issues with data synchronization at this point, which slows us down and affects customer service. And we're unable to, at this point, automate business processes to increase efficiencies, which would then in turn improve customer service. So the benefits to the system, as I move my notes here, would be a more modern user interface for all customers. Educators, the public looking up their teacher certification status at prep programs, institutes of higher ed, and our districts and our local education agencies, as well as provide appropriate data and information to both external key stakeholders and our internal. And we'd finally be able to employ metrics for key performance indicators and for our own continuous improvement of our processes and procedures. Next slide, please. So we did our due diligence in exploring what was out in the field and our options. And we first, besides just listening to what's been in the fields, I've been here since 2015, so kind of know who the players are. We did explore the state e-licensing solution in the summer of 2021. We determined that to have a high development cost, maintenance, and licensing costs that we just determined that would be unsustainable as our unit is funded on revenue. So we did a request for information to the field in fall of 2021. We got 9 responses. We reviewed those, and then we committed into developing a scope of work, not only exploring those the RFI responses, but also our internal processes. We developed the proposal January through April of 22, and then used our procurement team to go out to procurement in October of 22. We received 7 responses, reviewed those, and finally awarded the contract to Mainstream Technologies, who's been a major player in this area of our world for over 25 years. Next slide, please. And so our solution will be all-in-one. I heard earlier on an earlier presentation that all-in-one's not always good, but in this case, I think it is, because we're not transmitting educator data that impacts all of these portals and all of these key stakeholder groups. It is in one solution, and so we don't have to worry about this data moving around. We'll be providing service for the public. As I said, the public is interested in who's teaching their children. They like to look up certification status. The educator portal, which is our educators seeking to obtain and maintain their certifications or licensure. Our local education agencies, all our districts and charter schools who have a vested interest in the certification of their educators, as well as help them maintain their certificates, our ed prep programs, which are institutes of higher ed, as well as other organizations who engage in preparation of educators. And of course, the administrative portal for our staff here to be able to complete their services and realize additional efficiencies. And next slide, please, and I'll hand it off to Cora and Nero.
Is Q muted?
Yes, Q is. I apologize. Thank you, Bruce, and good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Cora Nero, Director of IT Program Management. As Bruce mentioned, ADE contracted with Mainstream Technologies, Inc. to build a custom cloud-hosted system. As such, Mainstream will handle application design and development. ADE business and IT teams will work together with Mainstream on data integration, technical design, and system security. There will also be shared responsibility for post-production support and maintenance, with Mainstream managing system support and ADE managing integration with other internal systems. Next slide, please. Thank you. This project is funded largely by a federal grant set to expire in September 30 of 2023, which is also our targeted deployment date. ADE has already began working through discovery with the vendor due to the tight timeline with federal funding. Had we known the depth of the potential development schedule, we would have done discovery as a separate initiative and built it separately. However, in preparation for the project, ADE business and IT team started mapping out the as-is process to identify all data connections with other systems. The project methodology will be Scrum framework with agile development. Initially, Mainstream will plan to work 2-week sprint cycles, but that's subject to change as we go through the retrospectives and try to determine the most efficient way to operate, for the team to operate. Development will consist of integration with ADE Connect for single sign-on and state payment portal and other ADE systems, along with the 5 portals previously mentioned by Bruce. Next slide, please. Total development cost is a little over $1.5 million. ADE has committed $1.35 million in federal grant funding to cover project costs. Federal funds account for approximately 88% of the project implementation costs, and they'll cover the $1.26 million for vendor implementation and the $84,000 for vendor hosting and security costs. IT contractors make up the remaining fiscal 23 costs with $181,000 from general non-APF state funds for dev PMBA QA assistance to build and test out data connections. Operational costs post-deployment will be funded by the certification program area. Next slide, please. Through discovery, ADE Business and Mainstream have evaluated ADE business processes and identified some pain points and areas to make staff more efficient through automation. Two such discoveries include efficiency opportunities around in-house evaluations and automating communications. Due to system limitations, it's difficult to measure KPIs for the current system, but the new system will be able to dial in timelines. For example, identify how long it takes evaluators to perform certain tasks and build in automation. Along with managing triple constraint, the most important measurement of success will be to identify MVP as soon as possible and ensure that that work is prioritized accordingly. Next slide, please. I think this is the end of our presentation. Are there any questions?
I will open it up to the committee. Mr. Byers.
So it looks like you're designing and building a system from scratch. There aren't any certification systems for education already in existence you can just bring in?
Mr. Byers, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, I'm going to go ahead and turn that one over to Bruce, as he was part of the RFP committee and has 15 years of history with ADE and certification. Bruce, do you want to tackle that one and talk about the seven responses that we did get?
Sure. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and Member Byers, there are players in the field. And there are systems that are built, but due to each state having different certification requirements, there always is a notion of customability. And so we did, during the RFP process, ask for an off-the-shelf. All of the responses, though, were custom-built.
And so does this federal grant have the ability to apply for a no-cost extension of time?
No. I'm going to double check, but I believe the answer is no. We can't do an extension of time on this grant.
It just strikes me that your schedule to design and build and deploy is awfully aggressive.
It is, Member Byers. It is an aggressive timeline, which, as Kiran had indicated, that is why identifying those critical MVPs for each one of those phases that Bruce lined out will be that most important thing that we do immediately. But I will agree with you. It is an aggressive timeline. And it will be critical that we get those MVP pieces identified and begin work as soon as we can on those pieces.
But given that you're going to pay for it with this federal grant and you're in doubt if you can get an extension of time, what happens if you don't make the schedule?
Bruce, I'll turn it back over to you to talk about your revenue that you guys have and how you would plan on handling that after the first
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Member Byers. So I think that along this process, both in a partnership with our own IT, the vendor, and the business, we're going to be prioritizing. And so when we see stuff slowing down, we will use the money in a way to utilize it most efficiently, like paying our own. We have to write some APIs and some connections on our own IT team. So funding that a little bit earlier, and that, so as we approach the September 30th point, what's not done, I can use the certification revenue, the remaining budget that I have, to fund the completion of the project.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a mix, committee member Byers. There's a mix of the funding.
I'd like to ask a clarifying question. And I think, Beth, you'll know why I'm asking this. Can you talk about, we've used the word customization. We have seven vendor reviews, several vendors reviewed with various offerings. Are we talking truly about customization? Are we talking about configuration to meet your requirements or some blend of that?
It is going to absolutely be built from scratch. There are a few pieces of technology that they have utilized for other solutions that they will be reusing. But it is going to be customized and configurable in the future. But it is a true customized solution.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Murray and then Mr. Fleetham.
Based on that comment, what processes are going to be put in place to ensure the assessment of those applications if they're being custom built from scratch, rewritten through this development process to ensure that it's done with secure coding best practices, meeting all the requirements of the state agencies, et cetera?
The ASRAMP certification is going to be going forward. They will be working towards ASRAMP certification. We will be doing UAT testing. But other than ASRAMP certification, Mr. Murray, that would be my response to that question. And as the development is happening and they are documenting everything that they're doing according to the NIST, they will be working with the Department of Homeland Security towards that certification.
Okay. ASRAMP will be specifically focused on the security of their cloud environment, not necessarily the application that they're writing for you. If they have some secure coding development guidelines or processes or capabilities, that's something we'd want to make sure that that's built into that CI/CD pipeline.
Or something else to, I guess I would ask, Beth, would be prior to go live, are you planning scheduling security pen testing and you know, any sort of, are they producing a system security plan, those types of artifacts?
Yeah. For you? Yeah, a system security plan will be delivered at the same time that we will be reviewing with Homeland Security the final authorization to operate, and the system security plan will be delivered at that time and reviewed. But no, we do not have anything in our schedule to schedule a pen test of the solution. We did not fund to have an actual pen test, but the system security plan will be delivered prior to authorization to operate.
I'll just add as we get closer to that, let's work closely on what that looks like. We might have some resources we can provide to you and the agency to ensure that that application is developed appropriately and that that assessment is done before go live.
That would be wonderful. Thank you for that, Mr. Murray.
Of course.
Director Fleetham.
Yes, Mr. Murray and Chairman Sloan, you asked a couple of questions that I was interested in. But also, I just wanted to clarify that because it's a specialized support, it's a specialized system, that's really why the support costs are so high, right? It's because you're going to have, you won't have general skilled people. You're going to have people that are specifically trained to support this process, this system. Is that correct? Is it the support costs look pretty high? So
the support costs include the hosting costs, the support of the system, so it's all encompassing, not just the act or the resources to support it, but it is all encompassing of the vendor hosting that solution for us.
Beth, one of the footnotes on the operational costs is that it does include our Azure footprint, that's baked into the operations, and that's more so to give Bruce a true picture of what it's going to cost at total cost of ownership for the entire the new system plus what we're currently maintaining in our Azure footprint.
Okay, thank you. Do you believe that there's going to be because of the complexity of it, we're going to have it's going to be difficult to support moving forward once you're live?
From ADE's perspective, I do not believe so. We are going with a SaaS solution for that purpose only, or for that reason, to ensure that the vendor is supporting the system. They will have that relationship with Bruce and his team on doing any maintenance. And from ADE's perspective, the portion of the support and maintenance that we have is where our skill set already lies. That would be those APIs and the interfaces with our internal systems. So we're actually looking forward to handing off some of the support of the system to a SaaS solution.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Beth, I'm sorry. I'm going to ask another question. Do I now understand that the solution's being hosted in education's Azure cloud environment? And okay, so the vendor's providing an Azure cloud environment. Okay, all right.
No, the vendor is hosting it in their cloud. Their cloud.
Okay, data so center. It's truly a managed cloud solution for you, not in your own environment.
100%. Okay. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
That was going to lead me to a whole different set of questions of how are you.
That's why I tried to
control.
That's why I tried to get you down there.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks for that clarification. Eddie, back to you.
Mr. Chair, Mainstream Technology is a kind of a smaller company. It's not one of these, you know, well-known companies. My question to the team, what's the long-term viability financially of this company as it relates to them being in business for years to come? Has anyone have made a request to Mainstream Technologies as to their business viability and how they are doing financially as a company? I know they're a privately held company, I believe, but that's my question.
Mr. Cook, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, I cannot answer that. I have not personally done that. Bruce, was there any conversation as you guys went through the RFP process? I was not a member of the RFP committee. Was that discussed? And I do know they have been in business for 25 years. I do know that the state of Colorado just implemented a large piece of their correction system with this company. But that is all I know at this point.
I believe they're in two other states as well, doing similar work in education, some of it certification, some of it other state report carding systems. But as to a forecast of their sustainability, I don't believe we've asked for that.
Would you not think that would be important to ask?
I would say, Beth, that the Mainstream, according to their information, has been in business for 25 years. And one of the things that we're looking at is during the RFP process, I know that that the team was assessing, you know, what it would take for us to host it. We own the code. At any point in time where they're not operational, we could, you know, resume hosting on our end with the code, making sure that we have a good turnover plan in order to host it ourselves and to continue operations internally.
So then, did your procurement process and contract include? I'm forgetting the term off the top of my head. Basically, it's a repository of the source code that you have access to if they become insolvent. Yeah.
It was part of their response. Yes. Where they made mention that we own the code.
Okay. And then in terms of the technologies that it's being written with, is that stuff that is within the current skill sets, general skill sets of ADE staff, or is this something you'd need to go out and find another vendor to support?
I would say maybe, do we have Joe online? Because I know he was a part of the response and we're still going through discovery, but we've, most of the technology that we've identified that they're using, they're things that we, tools that we have in-house.
Skills we have in-house.
I don't think there's anything that they're proposing that we don't have. There may be some, I know we're talking OAuth versus,
SAML.
Thank you, Joe, thanks, Joe, for jumping in. He knows all the tech.
Yeah. Yeah, it is within the realm of our skill set. They use Docker. We don't use Docker, but SSIS, SQL Server, Windows Server 2019. I mean, these are all part of the stack that they responded with.
Okay. And then beyond source code, are they including maintenance of documentation?
Q, do you know what the delivery is for training materials and documentation?
Honestly, this is less about training materials. This is more about system documentation and the design.
Oh, architecture.
If you need to take this on yourselves and or engage a third-party vendor, having the source code documented will be important for them to be able to really ramp on, quickly ramp as opposed to figuring it out.
Thank you, JR. We'll make sure and make that part of our conversations as we go through discovery and requirements gathering.
Hey, JR, I have a couple of questions for you. Back to the idea of, you know, this vendor, from the state perspective, what's the best practices for evaluating the sustainability of a small company, and where do you feel comfortable that they've met, you know, what you believe are the necessary needs to, you know, move forward with a company like this?
So, Eddie, the way I answer that question is, at least for the procurement processes that I'm involved with, and as I understand that the State Procurement Office advises, is that typically the viability of a vendor from a financial perspective, that's part of the evaluation criteria. You know, so where you're looking at not just, you know, who offers the solution, you know, how does it fit, but also what is the, you know, and you look at it, you have to look at it in context, right? In terms of, you know, if the domain of providers for systems like this is not a big field, and doesn't have a lot of big players, you have to kind of take that into account. So it is, from a best practice perspective, it is included as part of the evaluation criteria. But I'll have to say, I don't know how that factored into the scoring for this particular procurement process.
And then the second question to the team, as relates to when I think about when the product is delivered to us, what is the SLA as it relates to when there's bugs and different things that need to be fixed? What's in the contract for us to get an SLA back from them on, you know, critical, mission critical bugs or common fixes? You know, has there been discussion related to that?
So for the most part, bug fixes and support is included in the contract. It's part of the contract. Annual maintenance, software maintenance and support package. So that includes bug fixes and continuous.
Right, but I think the member's question in this case, Karan, was when we talk about an SLA or service level agreement, you know, this is going to come in terms of if you have a critical system issue, they contractually say we will respond to you within 4 hours, right? Or your best efforts to resolve within, you know, 24 hours, that type of thing. And those terms should be very clearly spelled out in your contract.
Yeah, the terms of the SLA are not included in the contract, but we will, as we've done in other situations, ask for SLA with that information. That way we have a clear understanding of what those turnaround times are for critical or, you know, high priority bug fixes, to make sure that we have a clear expectation of when and how long it's going to take to get things resolved.
Okay. Mr. Murray.
I just wanted to add one clarifying question to what Mr. Cook asked you, Chairman Sloan. Is that fiscal viability or long-term outlook of those companies that we do business with in the state, is that something that SPO will do as part of their evaluation before awarding a contract, or is that something required as part of state agencies procuring services to do as part of their evaluation?
As I have seen it, the procurement officers in the agencies will include this as part of their evaluation criteria. And typically they will engage, I think, with some finance folks as well. They have a set of scoring criteria that they apply. It will effectively come out with a score for an individual vendor. And that should be then relayed back to the team as part of the procurement process.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if I may, I reached out to our procurement officer and asking him what his process was and what they looked at for the 7 responses to the RFP. And I got a do not disturb. So if he responds back before the end of our meeting here, I will get you that criteria.
Thanks, Beth.
You're welcome.
All right. Any other questions or topics for discussion? All right. We'll turn it back over to you, Bob.
It would actually be me, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry, Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the conditions as presented.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and call them out. Conditions 3 and 4 are beyond what you've seen in others. This is effectively the completion of the ASRAMP processes and actually covers on, I think, the delivery of the system security plan. You'll see an item 3. Will be covered there, and then the full ASRAM process in number 4. So any questions on the conditions or discussion? Okay, I will take a motion with regard to the project.
This is Ryan. I motion to approve with the conditions as presented.
Thank you, Ryan. Do we have a second?
Just a second.
Thank you, Jeggy. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Thank you, committee. Thank you, Beth and Bruce and Joe and Karen. Good luck with your project.
Thank you, everybody. Happy New Year to everybody, and we look forward to providing you an update in the near future.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got Department of Economic Security coming back. This is an change request on the AZ CARES project.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Bob Mussey. I'm the engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here once again by members of the Department of Economic Security, who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of the project change request. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, on December 21st, 2020, ADOA ASSET approved the original project investment justification to procure the DCSS Atlas replacement AZ CARES solution. Today, the Arizona Department of Economic Security is seeking approval to extend the project timeline, modify the scope of work, and increase the project budget. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed change request and answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. With me today, in the interest of time, I'll go ahead and introduce the DES staff that are available for any questions that may arise. Heather Noble, our Assistant Director for the Division of Child Support Services. Durga Patella, our Chief Technology Officer. Roberta Harrison, our Chief Financial Officer for the agency. Valeria Garcia, our Business Administrator within Child Support Services. Corey Kappas, who is our Deputy Chief Financial Officer, and Arif Sundara, who is our project director for the AZ CARES project. Next slide, please. Mr. Chair, members, today we're going to give you an update on the project status and go over a change request associated with, as Bob pointed out, timeline, scope, and cost. Next page. As Bob pointed out, back in December of 2020, we came before the committee to get approval for the actual project, which was a replacement of the legacy mainframe child support system. The acronym for the system is ATLAS. The solution that was selected was a system that Deloitte has deployed in other states. The main difference between the deployment in those other states and the deployment here in Arizona other than meeting all of the business requirements, was also platforming the system on the Salesforce application platform. After going through all of the feasibility and comparing the various bids, Deloitte was selected for the project, and the project kicked off back in, I believe it was January of 2021. Next slide, please. So as I pointed out, the project has been going on. I do want to update one bullet point on this slide. We have updated the project completion, which was listed here as 75%. As of last week, it was at 80%. We have completed 100% of the development of packages 1, 2, and 3, and all of the functional requirements for the data conversion, which admittedly is one of the most complex portions of this particular system endeavor. The IAM vendor has completed 100% of the systems integration testing for packages 1 and 2, and the SVT testing as well. The project team collaboratively has revised the integrated master schedule, which is one of the things that is part of the change request that we are requesting. I do want to talk a little bit about what has driven that timetable adjustment that we're requesting, and we'll cover that here in a slide or two. We are continuing to work with the QA vendor, the IVMV vendor, the implementation vendor, and our staff internally within the agency, looking at the systems integration testing, coordinating the testing activities that the agency will be undertaking. We're about a week and a half, 2 weeks away from entering into user acceptance testing, which is exceptionally good news. I'm looking forward to moving forward with that final phase of the project. We had initially planned for statewide rollout, I believe originally was April timeline. We are adjusting that to June of 2023. Next Mark, slide, please. Yes.
Before you leave this slide, just for the members to have context, your third bullet talks about basically being dev complete on packages 1, 2, and 3. Are there additional packages beyond that that are yet to be developed, or is that, does that represent the current plan scope of development?
That represents the current plan scope of development, or packages 1, 2, and 3.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for pointing that out. Next slide, please. Overall project health currently is yellow. A bulk of that is associated with the schedule that we will talk about. Also a change request associated with some additional development work that the agency has identified and associated with some of the delay in timeline that we experienced late in 2021. Next slide. Overall budget, the current financials, the original development budget was $58.7 million, operational of just over $2 million. The original approved budget was $60.7 million. Expenditures to date are about $14.7 million. Again, the bulk of these expenditures, especially as it relates to the IAM vendor, this is a milestone-based contract. So the vendor has to meet milestones outlined in that contract for development work and testing before they would receive payment. Remaining in the budget right now is approximately $43.9 million, roughly 75% of the budget. Next slide. So the current timeline, as outlined here again, had us in the UAT and implementation going through the end of January, and the federal certification and statewide deployment looking like April of this year, with the closeout phase running from July through January of 2025. That closeout phase also involves some of that federal certification work and also doing the closeout with the vendor, doing final contract payments based on milestones, that type of thing. Next slide. What is changing? We're changing the project end date from January of 25 to February of 26. I know that looks a little bit shocking. The bulk of what we're talking about, that federal certification period that we were originally looking at 90 days, in discussions with the Office of Child Support at the federal level, they are looking at extending that certification period, which will extend the project timeline. We've also seen some delays in the original project timeline associated with development and some of that quality assurance work. So that also has played a part in that extended timeline. In regards to the scope, we have de-scoped some items associated with interfaces that we were originally hoping to be able to integrate, but based upon some of that work, and these interfaces were with county courts, that type of thing. These were not internal interfaces that we were looking at, but some of those external interfaces, they just feasibly were not able to be done for the project. And then we've also added some scope around some business process changes that have taken place since the original contract requirements were put in place almost 2.5, 3 years ago now. And then looking also at the development budget, going from 58.7 million, just over 60.2 million is the request. What's initiated the change, of course, related to the project schedule, is making sure that we are going to be deploying a system that not only will go live and stay live, but will meet the needs of the state, not just for current business, but for years to come. As many of you are probably aware, anytime we deploy a large-scale system of this nature, it's probably something that's going to be in place for decades, unfortunately, not just 5 or 7 years. So we're looking at that and making sure that the system gets deployed has to work, and it has to work correctly. We don't want to sacrifice system functionality or stability in order to meet a date. So that is something that we have been looking very closely at as we work with the vendor. Also looking at how can we ensure that a quality product is being deployed, and that once it goes live, our staff have that functionality that they need. Next slide. So what we're looking at and what we're requesting from the committee is approval of the re-baseline schedule. As you see here, that UAT and implementation timeline is extended out to the end of July. We anticipate that statewide rollout will happen towards the end of June, first part of July, and then we will enter into that federal certification portion, which will start in October, and that will run. It was a little hard on the slide to outline both the closeout phase and the federal certification, but that federal certification pace will extend a little bit into that closeout, and it will start during that after statewide go live in July. So that is the revised schedule. Next page, please. This gives a little bit more detail around that updated project timeline, when different activities will start and end. As you can see, what is coming up in January is the system testing will be going into user acceptance testing, and then starting implementation towards the end of January and running out from there through the end of June, and then also looking at entering into that federal certification piece. Next slide. This gives further detail on the various activities, when they will start. Next page. This gives a lot more detail in terms of the different tasks that will be going on, what the original start and end dates were, what the revised end dates were. I think the big one here is that federal certification timeline. In discussions with the Office of Child Support Enforcement at the federal level, we were originally anticipating that we would be able to start that federal certification process when we started the pilot phase of system deployment. However, in discussions with OCSE, they are asking that we delay that start of federal certification until we go to full statewide deployment. So that was a change from our original plan, and that is why you've seen the timeline be extended out to 2025. We also have that final invoice payment period with the implementation vendor and any of the associated vendors. That will likely go into probably not all the way into 2025, but certainly it will be extended based upon that federal certification period. Next slide. Change requests associated with the budget, as outlined here, you'll see the increases and decreases. One of the things that I will say as it relates to that project contracted resources, we had initially, based upon the work, scope of work that we looked at internally, we had initially planned to have a number of state FTE hired to be able to take on that work. Due to the fact that the labor market was so competitive, we were not able to bring those folks in. So we did see a much higher cost associated with contracted resources to do some of that work. And that's why you see the project contracted resources number increasing significantly. And we do have a implementation vendor change that was looked at, and that cost is significant as well. On the upside, we have been able to significantly reduce the cost of the software licenses for the development phase, and also significantly reduce our facilities cost as we've been able to do the bulk of the work associated with the system virtually. So the overall net change request for the development phase is an increase of $1.5 million. This is predominantly a federally funded project, and so we do have the budget available. We are currently awaiting final review and sign off from the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement for both the revised schedule and the project change request associated with the budget. So I do want to add that piece in there. Next slide. This gives a little bit more detail around the cost associated with the change request, how the net adds and subtracts work out for the different pieces. You'll see the contracted resources, what's been federally approved and what's currently under review, and what we're looking at from a cost perspective. Next slide. Again, further breakdown, you'll see the major savings associated with those software licenses and the facilities cost as well there. Next slide. With that, Mr. Chair, members, happy to entertain any questions that you may have. Thank the committee for their time today, and really happy to report that we are 80% through and we are getting ready to enter into user acceptance testing, which will be that final phase, and then going into that pilot deployment phase as well.
All right, thanks, Mark. We'll go ahead and open it up to the committee for any questions. Okay, so I'll tell you what, I got a couple just for clarification. So one, Mark, I did hear you say that this is predominantly a federally funded project. Is that true both for the development costs and your operational costs? Because as we looked at the financials, the operational costs are ramping up a bit from what was previously forecasted. So
Mr. Chair, members, yes, that is the case. This is predominantly a federally funded program, so both for the development and the ongoing cost portion would be through that federal funding sources.
Okay. And then I think you actually answered the question I had. I was going to ask something on the federal certification process. I think you covered that. So, nope, I think I'm good there. Any other questions from the committee? All right, then I will entertain, or actually I'll turn it back over to Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending that the change request be approved with the standard conditions as presented.
Any question or discussion on the conditions? If there are none, I will take a motion with regard to the project. Chuck.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just to put it on the record, since this is a change request, we did add the condition regarding the system security plan in there. So it's a slight change from the original PIDGE approval. I don't need to go into the specifics. Okay. I put it on the record for our notes.
No, thanks for calling that out, Chuck. So again, I'll open up to the committee for a motion with regard to the project.
Mr. Chair, move to approve with the conditions.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Do we have a second?
Chairman, I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, that's a unanimous vote. Thanks for the update, Mark, and thanks for having the entire team here to prepare to answer questions.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for your time today and for the review and approval. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Thank you. Okay, the last item for us on today's agenda is an informational update from the Department of Administration on the HRIS modernization project.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is once again Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager of the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by other members of the Department of Administration. At this time, the team will introduce themselves, then provide the committee with an informational update to the overall status of the HRIS modernization project, PIDGE number AD22009.
Thank you, Bob. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Emily Parrish. I am the State Human Resources Director and executive sponsor on this project. I'm delighted to be here with this group today. We were before you last summer looking for support for this project. And since that time, we have just been off to the races. But surely it has been a team effort. And so I'll introduce the folks from DOA and the project team that we have here today and move into a brief update. On the call, we have Alba Valencia, our HRIS Modernization Program Manager. She will be leading some of the update this afternoon. Jody Lauer, our HRIS Senior Manager. Victor Carrasco, the Technical Manager for our HRIS system. Monica Luxacaba-Hickox, who leads our budget work for us out of the DOA Budget Office. And Jackie Donaldson, our CGI project manager, and of course, CGI is our vendor on this project. So moving on to the next slide, please. Just as a quick refresher, our HRIS system here with the state manages our the state's payroll, benefits, and all the core HR functionalities for our state workforce. It is the system of record for all of the employees who are part of the state system. So a big undertaking and project for the state, which will provide a modern platform for our employees to access and managers and teams at the agencies. Of course, security is at top of mind. Our current system will reach end of life security in 2027. So our new CGI platform will ensure we have the latest security available for all of the data that we keep on our HRIS platform. We are following the state's cloud first policy with this project, so we'd be very happy to move to the cloud through this project. We will be focusing on minimizing customizations. Our current system is heavily reliant on agency customizations or other bolted on, as I like to think of them, systems to accommodate agency needs over time. And we are working very hard to eliminate and reduce those shadow systems, bolt-on systems as part of this project, so we can see the full efficiencies of a new modern platform with our CGI advantage solution. So we are here this afternoon for our quarterly update, really looking forward to sharing where we are at with the project. Some major updates that we have accomplished so far is we've had our project kickoff with CGI. We brought together all of the project leads from DOA and the CGI team to begin the planning and real work of the project. We are currently in what we're calling the align phase. It has started with documenting the state's as-is business processes. We want to be able to ensure that we are capturing accurately how we do business through the HRIS system today. So anything that is statutorily required or otherwise required, we can ensure that that is brought over to the new system as necessary. But of course, we don't want to copy and paste what we have now into a new shiny system. We are also in this align phase working on our future state or current state, our future state or to-be systems and how those processes will look so we can reduce steps, staff time, and ensure efficiencies so our HR staff and employees at large can spend their valuable time doing higher value or level work while relying on a much better and modern technology system. Through this align phase and our ramp up with CGI, we have also been documenting and finalizing our governance structure and other planning documents that are requiring signature. So those are the major updates, but I will turn it over, Alba, to you for a discussion on the project health.
Thank you, Emily. Can we get to the next slide? Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Alba Valencia. As Emily mentioned, I am the program manager for the HRIS project. And thank you for allowing me to provide some updates. These are our quarterly updates. I believe this is the first update that we have provided following our initial presentation back in July. So as I'm going along, if you have any questions, feel free to ask them, and I will pause and take a minute to answer your questions. As far as the schedule, as Emily mentioned, the team is currently working through the align phase, what's called the align phase, and that's the process, business process reengineering, where we take the state's as-is processes and develop an enterprise standard solution. So the team is currently working through that process. We've defined all of the tasks that are associated with the align phase and really created a schedule that everyone is adhering to. We're tracking on time to that particular schedule. So the align phase will be scheduled to end in April. And we are committed to meeting that deadline. As far as my, as far as milestones, CGI has provided a milestone-based project. So we have several milestones that have happened since the last time we met. The project kickoff happened in October. We've baselined the project plan. We've also started to finalize documentation from CGI. So CGI provides a framework of different methodologies for things like their scope management, risk management, change management, and all of the other things that are associated with projects. So we have finalized those plans with CGI and also signed off on them. There was a contract amendment that reset the schedule and the milestones. So we aligned to September of, August 22nd. Oh, and I'm sorry. We aligned to September 24th or September of 2024. And that was, I think, just a few months after the initial or the original start date of August of 2022. So there was just a slight delay in that start. So we realigned all of the timelines to reflect that. We held our first executive steering committee meeting in November. And like I said before, we aligned those tasks for the first phase of the project and got a schedule to support that for April of this year. We do have a budget slide that we're going to provide some updates on, but overall, high level, our project cost for the first part of the project are slightly lower, and that's due to the realignment or that reset of the project schedule. And we will have to make that up at the end of the project. So you'll see that that realignment shows up at the end of that project, of the end of the project. As far as risk, we have currently identified a number of risks that we are developing mitigation plans for, and we're working with CGI to implement those mitigation plans. We are also maintaining those risks on a biweekly basis with CGI, making sure that updates and those who are accountable or responsible for those risks are providing updates and adhering to the mitigation plan. Currently, there are no issues, but as we move into the secondary phase, which is configure and develop, we expect to document several issues as they come up, and we will offer plans to mitigate those issues. Next slide, please.
Thank you, Alba. I'll jump in here again for our budget slide. As Alba indicated, the project is going financially well. We are in the green for our finances. And before I go any further, I would be remiss not to introduce, of course, Jacob Wingate on the call as well. You saw Monica's name as our budget manager for this project. Jacob is the CFO at DOA, and we work closely with him on our budget as well. So as there are technical budget questions, if this committee has any, I will ask for Jacob's help in responding. The projections do show we have anticipated lower costs for FY23 than we had originally anticipated. And as Alba indicated, that's mostly due to timing of the launch of the project. The budget was enacted a bit later than anticipated, which impacted some of our spending. And also as we finalized the procurement towards the end of the fiscal year last year, we recalibrated to begin a couple months after that with the project in earnest. Some of the additional savings are project staff being hired later in the fiscal year than originally budgeted or anticipated for, which had a cost savings. And also, as Alba indicated, we realigned the project milestones to be more accurate, reflecting the start date of the project, and so that we could more easily track the milestones for the project and pay the contracted price at the as we meet those milestones with CGI. And with that, I am happy to answer any questions on the budget chart or turn it over to Jacob for answers as well. Okay, not seeing any, so I think we can move to the next slide. And Alba, I'll turn it back over to you for the project timeline.
Thanks, Emily. So this is the project timeline that indicates the overall project. There are two phases to the project. Phase one, which is the core implementation of benefits, payroll, HR, positions, benefits. Did I already say benefits? So those are the things that will be implemented in that first phase. And then there's a second phase, which includes things like talent, performance, that type of thing. That will be the phase two. But the overall project is scheduled to go from October of 2022 till September of 2024. That's actually the first phase. And then the second phase of the project will go from October of 2024 through September of 2025. Currently, I mentioned that we were in the align phase. Following the align phase or starting within the align phase is the configure and develop phase. So I do have a slide following this one to talk a little bit more about what happens during the align phase and what we're doing right now. But the configure and develop phase is coming up quickly, and we'll be starting that in February. And because CGI offers an agile methodology to their development of the project, we will be starting that within the align phase. As we progress and continue to be on time with our task, those that are finished or those work streams that are finished will go into that configure and develop, and we'll move quickly through that that phase. Any questions with this timeline? Okay. Next slide. All right. Yeah, and as I mentioned, we are on schedule for this align phase. There are quite a few tasks that have to be performed. As far as agency involvement, we've gathered a lot of agency feedback during the as-is requirements review, and we're currently in some work streams moving towards that to-be process, that enterprise standard solution that we're looking for. So this is just a metric to kind of show where we are. And this is reporting on all work streams within the align phase. And that would be all those things that are implemented in that phase one. So this includes everything. And as we move closer to April, I expect these the bars to go up as we complete more and more of these individual tasks. There's agency involvement, as I mentioned, during the as-is process. And there's also agency involvement when we go to the to be process. We want to make sure that we're gathering that feedback from all of the agencies and really partnering with them to make sure that their voice is heard during this entire requirements phase of the project. It's very important to make sure that we've got that feedback. And I think that is all I have on that slide. Any questions? Okay, next slide.
Okay. And okay. I'll say sorry. Before I open it up to the committee for questions, one additional item in the spirit of transparency, I will note that I also serve as an executive sponsor for this project and serve on the executive steering committee for the project. So with that, open up to any questions. All right, hearing none. Thank you, Alba and Emily.
Thank you very much, JR and committee members. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today.
Yeah, it's an encouraging update. Thank you so much. All right, folks, that concludes our agenda items for the day. Our next meeting is scheduled for February 15th. We look forward to seeing you then. Goodbye now.
All right, team, let's go ahead and stop the recording. And the live streams.